Headline edition, June 23rd, 1947. The Senate has overridden the president's veto of the labor bill with 6 votes to spare. CIO Shipbuilders of New York, whose contract expires at midnight tonight, plan to test legality of the Taft-Hartley labor bill. The Supreme Court, in 2 decisions, upheld the so-called anti-Petrillo bill and the government's right to the rich California oil tidelands. France, Russia, and Britain will meet Friday to consider action on the Marshall Recovery Plan for Europe. Secretary of State Marshall has asked for authority to furnish standardized weapons to Canada and Latin American countries. Headline Edition will bring you special reports and interviews in a moment.
The American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations present Headline Edition with Les Griffith, substituting for Taylor Grant. From all over the world, wherever the day's headlines are made, Headline Edition brings you accurate, timely reports on the news behind those headlines, plus informative, in-person interviews with the men and women who made the headlines today. Today's edition presents, from Washington, an analysis of the Taft-Hartley labor bill. General Jacob Devers, commander of the Army Ground Forces. A report on a strange twist in Greek-American relations. And a special report from Paris on the coming Big Three conference. To stay in step with history in the making, stay tuned to Headline Edition. Now here's Les Griffith.
This is Les Griffith, substituting for Taylor Grant. A new era between labor and management has begun in this country. The Taft-Hartley bill became the law of the land this afternoon when the Senate overrode President Truman's veto. For what happens now, where does labor go from here? Here is Tris Coffin in Washington.
The Taft-Hartley labor bill, so voluminous and so controversial that few people can talk either lucidly or calmly about it, is now the law. The Senate, at a tense and crowded session, voted 68-25 to override President Truman's veto. The administration was beaten by the Southerners. 16 of them voted against the president. Some of the main points of the law are: 2 new members will be added to the 3-man labor relations board, but more powerful than any member will be the chief counsel. Once he is confirmed by the Senate for a 6-year term, he has final authority on many basic issues. The government is authorized to seek a court injunction whenever, in the discretion of the president, national health or safety is affected by strike or lockout or threat of either. Jurisdictional strikes, secondary boycotts, and the closed shop are prohibited. Nationwide collective bargaining is restricted. Labor unions may not participate financially in elections or primaries. These are merely a few of the many complex provisions of the law. One flippant Labor Department official characterizes the measure as the Full Employment Bill of 1947 for the legal profession. The most direct and dramatic reaction to the passage was the walkout of coal miners in Birmingham, Alabama. 10 mines were forced to suspend operations. About 2,000 of the miners, all members of John Lewis's United Mine Workers, took a walk. President Truman, who was working quietly this afternoon in his sunny office, had no comment. CIO President Phil Murray said cautiously, "The situation which now confronts American labor will be assessed by the executive board of the CIO at a meeting Friday in Washington." Gerard P. Van Arco, general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, resigned, saying, "I have grave doubts of the workability and fairness of the new law." Earl Bunting, the president of the National Association of Manufacturers, thanked Congress for, as he put it, "carrying out the clear mandate of the American people that steps be taken to end labor strife." Congressman Halleck, the House Republican leader, appealed to Mr. Truman's pledge of cooperation with Congress. Halleck suggested he meant by that the president nominate for the new jobs persons acceptable to the Republicans. Several labor groups seem willing and even anxious to test the law. The CIO Shipbuilding Workers Union seems in line for the first honors. Its contract expires at midnight tonight. John Green, the union president, said, "If we must be the first to test the bill in the courts, let us do it." Headline Edition continues from New York.
The Supreme Court closed its doors today until October, but ruled on 3 important cases. First, the judges upheld the constitutionality of the Lee Act, directed against music czar James Petrillo by Congress. The court then decided in favor of the government's claim to ownership of the rich oil lands along the California seacoast. And third, the court upheld the convictions for extortion of 2 ex-union officials, Joseph Fay and James Bove. The Senate Appropriations Committee has voted the Navy $3.5 billion for next year. $176 million above the figure voted by the House. Secretary of State Marshall has appealed for standardization of armaments in North and South America. He said the program would cost some $10 million a year. And he added, if we don't help Canada and our Latin American friends, they will, of necessity, seek such help elsewhere. Despite the atomic bomb and the possible invention of even more potent weapons of destruction, the U.S. infantry still remains an integral part of our military setup. General Jacob Devers, commander of the Army Ground Forces, knows all the hows and whys of this situation. He is interviewed by John Bryson in Chicago.
General Devers, does the development of the atomic bomb lessen the importance of the infantry in warfare?
The atomic bomb increases the importance of the infantry. As a war correspondent in Europe, you will recall that Nazi V-2 rocket attacks did not stop, in spite of heavy bombing of the launching sites, until our ground forces defeated the enemy's ground forces and physically seized and occupied the sources of such attack. In any future war, we would have to stop atomic attack upon the United States in exactly the same manner. And by the same token, an aggressor would accompany his atomic attack upon us with ground troops to seek to stop our counterattack. We would require ground forces abroad to stop him at the source, and ground forces at home to contain and destroy his invading army and to restore order in bombed areas.
Well, do you believe that universal military training is absolutely necessary in the United States?
I certainly do. It is my belief that if we have universal military training, we will not have another war. We need universal military training to fill the ranks of our National Guard and of our Organized Reserve Corps. With the bulk of our regular army overseas, responsibility for the defense of the United States itself rests on these components. Without universal military training, they cannot accomplish that mission. But if we adopt universal military training, we will serve notice upon the world that we intend to maintain our defenses. Adequate strength on our part will preserve the peace until it can be assured through the United Nations. Likewise, a strong America greatly strengthens the United Nations, for no one starts a war unless he thinks he can win it.
General, in the event that universal military training is approved by Congress, how is the Army prepared to handle all the young men for whose training it would be responsible?
We have just extended for a second 6 months our Universal Military Training Experimental Unit at Fort Knox, Kentucky. This unit is not only a laboratory for training methods, but also a school to which we are sending as many officers, regular, reserve, and National Guard, and as many non-commissioned officers as possible. In addition, we are applying many of the things we have learned at Fort Knox to our regular training programs in our replacement training centers. When Congress enacts universal military training, Army ground forces will be ready with a trained cadre capable of expanding the program to whatever degree we are directed.
Thank you, General Devers. Now back to Les Griffith in New York.
The special UN committee investigating the Holy Land has been handed a stiff rebuke by the Palestine government. The chief secretary of the Holy Land government says the committee bypassed him when it recommended commutation of the death sentences imposed on 3 underground workers. 4 persons were killed when 2 communist meeting places were bombed in Sicily. Hungary's president has announced that close relations with Russia are necessary in his country. The Polish Ministry of Defense has asked British and American air attachés to remove their planes from Polish territory. Greek-American relations took a strange twist over the weekend when it was announced that food parcels from Greece to supposedly hungry American relatives had been arriving in this country in amazing quantities. Drastic action was taken today to stop this flow of food from Greece. Julian Anthony has been investigating the situation and reports to us now.
Customs inspector for the Port of New York, Mr. Harry Durning, has concluded a conference with Greek consular officials here this afternoon. As a result, further admission of food parcels to this country from Greece will be banned. Apparently, under some mistaken impression about the need for such food in the United States, Greek individuals, who could very likely be worse off than their beneficiaries here, have been shipping packages containing from 5 to 40 pounds of food. The packages are made up of a variety of home-prepared Greek items, including olives and olive oil, cheeses, and pressed meats. Some 16,000 packages arrived during 1 week recently in New York, but it's a single shipment of 1,500 parcels aboard the steamship Examiner, which has become the special concern of the Customs Department. Mr. Durning says a recent outbreak of hoof and mouth disease among American cattle has been traced to the shipments of food from Greece aboard the Examiner. For this reason alone, further shipments have been banned by this country. However, the question still remains of why Greeks consider it necessary or helpful to ship food here. When I asked Mr. Durning, he said he just couldn't guess the answer. He told me the packages normally addressed to individuals in the United States are handled through any one of several so-called Greek-American forwarding agencies. The Greek Consul General in New York says he thinks many people in Greece have been led to send packages as thanks for gifts for money and clothing, and organizations conducting the shipments have been making money by overcharging. At the same time, the American member of the UN Balkan Commission, Mark Etheridge, offers his opinion that the shipments seem to be a big racket. Investigations in Greece are underway. This is Julian Anthony reporting from New York.
More news in a moment.
Headline Edition presents headlines of the past. On June 23, 1683, William Penn signed a treaty of peace and friendship with the Indians. On this date in 1897, the Duke of Windsor was born. 16 years ago today, Wiley Post and Harold Gatty began their flight around the world. On June 23, 1944, the Russians opened a summer drive against the Nazis. 2 years ago today, Emperor Hirohito warned the Japanese they were in a crisis without equal in their history. And exactly 12 months ago, the pioneer movie star William S. Hart died in Los Angeles. Those are the June 23rd headlines of the past. Now, for more headline news of today, back to Les Griffith.
Great Britain, France, and the Soviet Union will meet in Paris on Friday for a Big Three conference on Secretary of State Marshall's plan for European recovery. Robert Sturdivant brings us the latest details from Paris.
A wave of hope is spreading over Europe tonight. That hope is based on the unqualified acceptance by Russia of a joint Franco-British invitation to hold a general conference on the economic reconstruction of Europe. This conference is the direct result of Secretary of State George C. Marshall's plan for American aid to a united Europe. In the National Assembly this afternoon, Foreign Minister Georges Bidault arose briefly to tell members of Parliament that the conference would be held in Paris beginning next Friday. And with evident pride, he referred to Paris as the historic capital of Europe. Bidault also announced that Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov himself would represent Russia at the conference. Now that the conference is settled, the problems that were confronted are popping up by the dozens. Most competent observers foresee that one big difficulty will be reconciling the different economic views of the United States and Russia. But the biggest problem is what to do about Germany. Since the economic unity of Germany is still a major obstacle in the way of a German peace treaty, it's certainly probable that the Paris Economic Conference will encounter plenty of trouble over this problem. This is Robert Sturdivant in Paris. Now back to Les Griffiths in New York.
Here are today's Major League Baseball scores. In the American League, New York 8, Cleveland 5, Boston 8, Detroit 2. In the National League, Chicago 6, New York 3. And now the closing Dow Jones stock averages, industrials up 1.0, rails up 0.6, utilities up 0.17. Here are other headlines of the day. Midwestern floods have disrupted railroad service on the main lines between Chicago and the West Coast. A government engineer has warned that a new and far worse flood is impending. He says it will wipe out all crops for the year in the Missouri Valley. In western Pennsylvania, work stoppages are reported at three soft coal mines owned by the Jones and Laughlin Steel Corporation. The walkouts took place less than an hour after the Senate voted to override the president's veto of the labor bill. At Lahore, India, the Punjab legislature has voted to partition that riot-torn province into Muslim and Hindu areas. And that's today's Headline Edition.
Tune in Tuesday at this same time for Headline Edition. You'll hear important reports from the names who make the news and vivid on-the-scene descriptions from the places where it's made. Headline Edition is directed by Charles Harrell. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.